It's been a tough time for natural disasters, so-called acts of God. You know, when I started working on this sermon about a month ago, I was forced to look at some distant events. In 2004, the Indian Ocean earthquake and tsunami, killing 230 to 280,000 people in 14 countries. An energy release equivalent of 26 megatons of dynamite, 1,500 times the Hiroshima bomb. Hurricane Katrina alone resulted in the death of some 1,800 people in pain and suffering and tragedy that is both untold and retold. And then suddenly, as I was preparing this sermon, four hurricanes and two earthquakes. Hurricane Harvey leaving more than 70 dead, a cost between $100 and $200 billion. Again, with untold suffering. Hurricane Irma, the second Category 5 storm in 2 weeks to enter the United States. The last such frequent occurrence was 15 years apart. I'm sure glad there's no global warming affecting these things. More than 80 dead, affecting the entire state of Florida. Again, similar costs. Hurricane Maria, the third Category 5 storm, wreaking havoc at this moment on many of those devastated just last week in Irma. And a magnitude 8.1 earthquake in Mexico that left some 100 dead just 2 weeks ago. And a magnitude 7.1 earthquake just yesterday in Mexico City, as of this moment, killing more than 200 people. Many of us today spent some time watching these heart-wrenching images of people searching for children in a destroyed school. And 32 years to the day, this earthquake occurred after another earthquake in Mexico City that killed more than 4,200 people. You know, the question we rabbis usually get is, where was God at Auschwitz? Of course, in magnitude, Auschwitz and the Holocaust were much worse than Katrina, Harvey, Irma, Jose, and Maria combined. At its height, the gas chambers at Auschwitz murdered the equivalent of a half dozen Katrinas every day, 10,000 people a day. World War II itself resulted in the deaths of some 45 million people, well over 180 Indian Ocean tsunamis. But hurricanes and tsunamis are theologically more difficult, because Auschwitz, it's not easy to understand, but it's simple to understand. It's simply the result of human free will. Maybe we wish we had less free will and we're not free to perpetrate such atrocities on the world. The rabbis debated for 2.5 years whether it was better or worse that humanity was created. Ultimately, they decided it would have been better were there no humans at all. But since we're here, we have the work of making the best of it. Maybe we would agree with them. We'd be better off not having free will, simply being tools of God with no free will. But would we really want this? Would we really be humans without free will? Imagine a world where we did not have the ability to decide for ourselves whether to do good or evil. We could be compared either to small children or to animals. This, I submit, was Eden. So the answer that makes sense for me concerning evil is the existence of evil is the necessary result of humanity's free will. The question is not where was God at Auschwitz, but where was humanity? The same thing regarding 9/11, drive-by shootings, murders, wars. These are evil acts of free will. They say more about the nature of humanity than about the nature of God. People often ask me, how can you believe in God after Auschwitz? But I wonder how you can believe in the essential goodness of humanity after Auschwitz. A tougher question are things like auto accidents, where poor judgment, poor design, failure, alcohol may contribute. And indeed, brush fires may be caused by either people or occur naturally. And we should question the more indirect role of fossil fuels and global warming that exacerbates the impact of hurricanes and droughts. But alas, our question is clearer and more difficult. It's hard to pin the earthquake, the tsunami, or a hurricane on human evil or even on human error. One might question whether a city like Houston or New Orleans should be built where it is. But should we not say the same thing about other cities, including our own, with fire, mudslide, and earthquake hazards? And what about the entire state of Florida? Or all of the islands in the Caribbean? And of course, we must evaluate whether we did enough to prevent the scope of suffering that resulted from these hurricanes. No, these were not acts of human evil or even human error. They were tragedies of nature. And to these, we should add illnesses like the plague, polio, AIDS, the Spanish flu, these mass illnesses. Spanish flu pandemic of 1918-19 claimed between 20 and 50 million people in the world and about 500,000 people in the United States. The common element you will hear about all of these is the apparent role of God. The insurance companies even call this these such things acts of God. So our questions are these indeed acts of God? If so, how can we love or even worship such a God? If not, how can God be in charge? If God's not in charge, who's in charge? Does our Jewish tradition address these questions? What does it have to say? If there are lessons to be learned from these tragedies, what are they? Although they are the most difficult questions for religions to answer, historically, they are not the focus of Judaism's inquiry. Judaism focuses on actions, what we call mitzvot, commandments, much more than what you believe. There is no dogma associated with Judaism. I took no vows when I became a rabbi, and we don't ask converts to Judaism to take a specific set of vows. My favorite example in discussing this is, let's say for a moment we were all very traditional Jews, and we had a great discussion, which we will be having later in October. I think it's October 20th. I can't quite remember the date. We're having one of the world's great scholars on the afterlife, Simcha Raphael, will be here at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a Sunday, speaking, and then later in Ventura for a different talk and a dinner. We could have this great discussion. Imagine we're arguing about the nature of the afterlife. And some people believe in reincarnation, and others believe in resurrection, and some people believe in 3 levels of heaven, and some people believe in 7 levels of heaven, and the nature of heaven. And we have this great discussion for 2-3 hours, and we can't come to an agreement. Is that a problem? No, we can believe whatever we want. Now it's time to eat. And we're very traditional Jews, and we begin to have an argument about whether this particular chicken is kosher. Is that a problem? You're darn right it's a problem. Unless we can agree on what's kosher, we can't eat, and that's a big problem. So Judaism focuses on the details of daily living, and we can believe what we want about these great and high questions. So there is no one correct answer to this problem. No one answer with which you must agree in order to be a good Jew. But there are lots of valid answers to these world tragedies. Valid Jewish answers and Jewish thoughts on this subject, and I'd like to share my own perspectives with you. These are not acts of God, but acts or characteristics of nature. They are not the same thing. I don't believe that this is part of a conscious, deliberate, divine will. The opening of the Torah has some interesting grammatical problems, which the rabbis interpret as saying God creates the beginning of creation but doesn't take it to its completion. As I hinted at earlier, God leaves to us the job of completing creation. There is randomness in the universe. Nature operates according to its own laws. These laws may have been designed or fine-tuned by God. A lot more about this tomorrow morning, about the laws of nature, laws of physics, and God, and the eclipse, and northern lights, and basketballs, and jar tops. How's that? God may have fine-tuned these natural laws, but I don't believe for a minute that their specific expression is given by God. I don't believe that God literally dictates each day's weather. Earthquakes, disease outbreaks. Even though God has set in place the laws of physics, chemistry, geology, or biology. As an analogy, Dr. James Naismith may have invented basketball, the sport and rules, in 1891, but I don't believe he preordained who will win next year's championship. So I believe that God set the laws in physics in place, but I don't believe that God preordains or controls outcomes and tragedies. A great example is if some idiot shoots a bullet in the air, the path of that bullet is determined by my old profession as a physicist rather than my new profession as a rabbi. God doesn't gently push the bullet so it strikes rotten people rather than good people. Even a tzaddik, you're a wonderful, righteous person, mazel tov. You still have to put on your seatbelt, you still need to take your meds, you still need to take care of yourself. There's a wonderful story in the Talmud about a father giving some instructions to a boy. And I should say that in the Torah, there are only two commandments for which we are specifically promised a long life. Commandment number one makes a lot of sense. Honor your father and your mother. Are you listening, children? Honor your father and your mother that you may have a long life. That's number one. Number two is rather strange and obscure. When you take eggs or baby birds from a nest, shoo away the mother bird first, so she doesn't see you taking the eggs, and you're promised a long life. So the father asks his son, "Son, please take that ladder, climb up the tree, and take some eggs from that nest." The son says, "Yes, Dad," and does as he is told, obeying commandment number one. When he gets up to the nest, he shoos away the mother bird, obeying commandment number two. You'd figure this kid is doing well, right? On the way down from the ladder breaks, and the boy falls to his death. And the rabbis are struggling to understand how this could happen. And so they start arguing, "Well, we don't believe the story ever happened." And they say, no, we heard this from Rabbi Yochanan, and we believe every one of his stories. And then they say, "Well, maybe he was thinking evil thoughts." And the rabbis say, no. In Judaism, we don't worry about thoughts. It's actions that count. And besides, he's obeying all these commandments. What kind of evil thoughts could he be thinking? And they debate, and they debate, and they debate. And guess what brilliant theological rabbinic insight they come up with? The ladder was broken. Even though you're the most wonderful person in the world, check your ladder. Because if it's broken, you're going to fall and get hurt. The world operates according to its own rules and own laws. I do believe that God has given us a divine role in the completion of creation. This is God's job. Not to be a celestial butler or puppeteer, but to be like a parent who created us and loves us, but more important, a heavenly teacher. You might even say, our rabbi who art in heaven. God has given us the mission and the tools. Our mission is ge'ulah, redemption, and salvation. But as I mentioned earlier, redemption and salvation are not so much about our soul in the next world, but about a political statement about what we're supposed to do in this world. We are told that this is a difficult task of epic, even cosmic proportions, that it will not be achieved easily. In the words of the mission, no alecha hamlacha ligmor. It's not up to you individually to complete the task. But no one is exempted from participating. Everyone has a role to play. In a sense, each of us have a piece of a puzzle to be placed in the puzzle of cosmic redemption, of tikkun olam, of repair of the universe. And if you don't play your part, if you don't place carefully and delicately your piece of the puzzle in the world, it may be eons before someone comes along with that exact piece of the puzzle. The tools that God gives us are the things that make humanity human, that make us worthy of being said to be created in the divine image. We have intellect. We have the knowledge to track hurricanes, to establish tsunami warning systems, to fight brush fires from the air and from the ground, to build hurricane and earthquake resistant buildings, to comfort those who are ill, treat and even cure their diseases. We have a conscience and a sense of what is right and wrong. We know that we should be using our resources to work on these problems, as well as our problems of hunger, poverty, peace. And we should not be working on weapons of mass destruction. We know what should be done, even if we're not always equal to the task. So when these disasters strike, I believe that we should not blame God, but redouble our efforts to ease suffering and prevent future suffering. And I believe we are doing that reasonably well. A few years ago, I spoke and confessed about being a naive optimist. We've cured so many diseases: infection, polio, smallpox, tuberculosis. We've learned to transplant organs. We've learned to create artificial organs. We've managed to avoid nuclear war. No small feat given the 77 years that nuclear weapons have existed. We've responded to world tragedies such as the tsunami and the hurricanes and others. But there is, of course, much more than we can be doing. This is precisely why I think it's so important that people be religious, that they act as though they are commanded to make the world a better place. Being commanded means that it's not just dependent on where your heart takes you when you get that loving, giving feeling. It means it's your job. And remember, you don't have to do it alone or even see it completed, but you're not free to do nothing at all. We get a choice as to whether we devote our lives and energy to such things as consumerism, self-indulgence, war, amassing toys on one hand, and making the world a better place on the other. Don't get me wrong, I think it's fine and wonderful to enjoy life. The Talmud suggests that one of the questions we will be asked when we meet our Maker is why we have failed to enjoy all the legitimate pleasures in life that God has made for us. But I do want people to feel as though they are commanded to mitzvot, commandments, by a mitzvah, a commander. I am certain that this is important for the health and happiness and future of the world, even though we might have a debate about whether there is a God. I believe in God. I have faith that there is a God. But it's a different kind of faith than the knowledge that this shofar exists. But I am scientifically certain that if we act as though there is a God, then God and the idea of God becomes a positive force in the world. There are times when the natural tragedies I see happening on my TV screens and happening in my own family's life break my heart. I mean this literally. There are times when I feel as though we are abandoned by God. There are times when I feel that God doesn't make any difference. Thank God these are only isolated moments. Because you see, there are other times when I see the sacrifice of so many people working so hard and risking their own lives and limbs to help people that they've never seen and would, under ordinary circumstances, never know. There are times when I see how the people of this nation open their hearts and pocketbooks to strangers halfway around the world, as well as those in our own country. And it matters not a whit that these strangers have different skin color, speak a different language, or worship a different God. And a lot closer to home for me and my family, there are so many times when I see people caring for those I love, when I see scientists working endless hours to cure the diseases that hang over the heads of my loved ones and yours, and when I see this community come together to support one another. These, I am certain, are acts of God. It is at these times when the answer to the question, where is God, is just as plain as the image of God is on each of your faces. May God give us the energy, wisdom, health, spirit, and resources to be able to live up to the divine role that has been given us. Kein yehi ratzon. May this be God's will.